You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the all-new Razor Guide Pack from Outdoor Edge has it all. Coming in at only 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe whitetail deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back. Hopefully everybody's doing well. We're in the midst of hunting season. It's gun season for a lot of people, and hopefully success is on the horizon for everybody, or you've already had a successful season. I'm doing well. This is going to be a busy week for me. A lot of client consulting discussions and opportunities that I'm working through for 2024. Most of my clients are in 2024 now, so if you are contacting me, just have awareness of that. Eventually, there's going to be a wait list, and I hopefully everyone can deal with that, because you know I can only take on so many clients on an annual basis. But we're going to get back with a buddy of mine. Anthony Barnum's been on this podcast before. You know, he's a gear guru in my mind, but we're going to talk about his hunting season, and then we're going to hit on some of the highlights and things that he focused on. Anthony's a very analytical person. He's an engineer by trade. Anthony also has some status updates. Now, if you remember, he talked about his property and was going through the logging process. And I think it's important to hit on, you know, his strategy like around that particular property and what he expected out of it, and then how that shifted throughout the season. And so, you know, you can log a property right up to hunting season or even during hunting season and find success. And so we'll hear a little bit more about that and his perspective on things. Anthony, are you online?
Yeah, John, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Great, man. Welcome back. How you doing? What's going on in your world?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. You know, had a pretty good deer season so far. You know, bow season ended up being a little bit slow for me and my two boys that are hunting with me. But we've really done pretty well so far during gun season. So yeah, it's been you know, been a fun ride, especially watching the boys come into their own and you know, be able to take a couple of deer.
So let's talk a little bit about your circumstance. You hunt locally. So you and I live around each other. You've got a spot up here that you hunt. You also hunt down in Western New York. You've got your family farm. And of course, you've got the property that you've purchased. You inherited some land and you have land that you've purchased yourself. Where did you spend the majority of your time?
Yeah, so we've probably, you know, during archery season, we ping pong back and forth between the property that we have access to up here in the central New York area and the farm, the family farm that I inherited, you know, in Steuben County. We didn't hunt much on the 30 or so acres that I own, you know, close to that family farm, because it was, you know, undergoing a logging operation that, you know, started back in, you know, March of this year. So, you know, that logging operation has been ongoing for quite some time. We're finally at the point where, you know, the trees of value that I had marked to be cut are out and have been sold. And, you know, we're in discussions with a logger about, you know, going back in, you know, after season is over here in the January timeframe, to go grab some of the tops for firewood and to move some of the tops around strategically, you know, to place them in areas where I want additional cover. So, That's kind of where things stand with that. But you know, back to bow season, we bounced back and forth between the local property and the property that's a couple hours away. I do not have permission to hunt that property during firearms season, so we've spent all of firearms season on our family farm a couple hours away.
Good, good. And it's nice to have options, and you do have options, which is the kind of the beauty of, you know, having these opportunities to kind of look at different deer dynamics and herds and caliber and quality and all those things. And over the years, I've always been intrigued. You know, I my family farm isn't that far from your property down in Western New York. I don't hunt down there anymore. I'd like to go back and hunt down there. But I'm kind of localized here in Syracuse, or just south of Syracuse. But the quality of hunting in some of these areas in New York State is phenomenal. Not only from a deer number standpoint, but from a quality standpoint. Herd ratios are more in check than people think. Some folks are managing deer. You know, some of this caliber, and we'll talk about the buck that you killed this year. You know, it's probably more the higher end spectrum of quality in the state. And that's not to say that there's other areas, you know, beyond Western New York that are just as good. There are. I've been to some really good properties throughout this state specifically, but south of you in Pennsylvania and then west of you in Ohio, I've been in those areas and just have seen some differences. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, your boys, family tradition. So you've got your son, your two boys, and then both those. You know, your son, Trevor, this is his first year gun hunting, correct?
Yeah, this is his first year. So he turned 12 in the middle of October. 12 is the legal age where you can, bow hunt and now, hunt with a firearm as well, as long as you have a mentor with you. So this is his first year deer hunting. He worked really hard over the summer shooting his bow and making sure that he was proficient with that. He was super amped up and excited for archery season to hit. He was chomping at the bit to get out in the woods. So that was, really encouraging and exciting to see that, he was taken to it. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to connect with his bow, but he was able to take his first buck with a crossbow right at the end of archery season, the last weekend of archery season before the firearm season hit. So, he was, like I said, successful and, super pumped, tickled to be able to take that deer.
And just for everyone's awareness, was that a year and a half that he killed?
Yeah, it was a year and a half old spike buck. The size of the antlers couldn't compete with the size of the smile on his face. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think I mentioned on the podcast I just did a solo podcast. I talked a little bit about some family traditions with me and my son. You know, next year will be his first year. So appreciate you sharing that. Now, your older son, who's hunted for a few years now, how old is he now?
He's 14 now.
Yep. Okay. So Timothy is 14 and he's been able to hunt and harvest deer up to this point. And how did his season go?
He had a pretty slow, archery season. He did get a couple of shots at does that, he just didn't quite connect, shot over the top of two different does, jumped the string on them or whatever. He set a goal for himself this year that he didn't want to shoot a buck that was, any less than 2.5 years old. It was something that, was completely up to him. He created that goal for himself, unprompted by me. And, he stuck to his guns. He had plenty of opportunities at, young bucks, year and a half old bucks. He didn't take the shots, and he was holding out for a 2.5 year old and, never really got an opportunity, during archery season for one.
So this is how I'll define you as an individual, and I'll take this, don't take this wrong or bad. You're a very patient person. Whether you know it or not, you're patient with your boys. You're also considerate of the options that you have on the table. And again, being very analytical, you tend to dig deeply into topics. And here's what I wonder him having that perspective. He wanted to improve his experience, and his experience being able to harvest, his harvest experience, harvesting an older animal. It's interesting that he was able to find that on his own. What do you think pushed him to that point? What do you think it was, behaviorally, what's happening at home? You know, what made him shift into that mindset?
Yeah, you know, I can't help but, you know, thinking that, you know, my perspective on things influenced him. You know, he knows that I'm targeting older deer, you know, 3.5 or even 4.5 and older. And, you know, so I think that certainly rubbed off on him. That being said, you know, he was able to take his first bucks, you know, one with archery equipment and one with a gun in the 2021 season. You know, both of those were 1.5 old bucks, and, you know, he was, you know, completely happy, very, very happy with those deer. But he's also, you know, very driven himself. You know, he's a super smart kid, and likes to challenge himself. And, you know, so I think the combination of having taken a couple of young bucks already, you know, the influence that, you know, that I have on him, you know, whether it's intentional or not, plus his drive, you know, to improve himself and to succeed, really, really played a role in that, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting to figure out how children collectively, you know, garnish or figure out these opinions or form these opinions based upon their environment, or in some cases, you know, and like you and I, we have both evolved. You know, my father didn't push large quality deer until I started pushing large quality deer, and he saw the benefits, and, you know, that played right into his idea of being patient and perseverance. So I want to flip the topic on you. You shot a buck in the 140s this year. Okay. So everyone's listening to me, you know, rant and rave about caliber quality, antler quality, those type of things. This is a top end deer, period. No question about it. One of the best deer that you've had on the farm this year. Yep. I don't know if you have any history with him, but let's go through the hunting season and how you killed this deer, collecting data. And then I want to go back and I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your other property where you've done the work, what observations you've had and what your plan going forward is. But let's dig into this deer. Do we name this deer? Does he have a name?
Yeah. So, it's funny. You know, I always consult with my kids. You know, I've got four kids, the two older boys that we've already talked about. Then I've got a younger boy, who's 10 years old, and my daughter's my youngest, and she's 8. So, when I get, you know, a picture, of a good deer on camera, you know, I usually will consult with them to, you know, kind of figure out a name for the deer so we know who we're talking about when we are discussing the deer. And, you know, so we were looking at these pictures of this particular deer. I think the first one that I had of him this year was in early September. And my daughter came up with the name Turner for him, because if you look at his picture, the tops of his tines all turn in toward the center. And, you know, I thought that was kind of a clever name for him. So Turner was the name that stuck.
I like it. So yeah, kids are funny. My kids named one of my target deer Blue. And I don't know where that came from. I think my daughter was coloring and she goes, we'll call him Blue. So, you know, whatever shape, way, or form, you know, meaningful or not, that's funny. All right. So this deer, have you had history with him in the year prior to that? Because deer sometimes come and go.
Yeah. So the deer that I shot this year, I only had on trail camera, maybe 2 or 3 times last year. Never saw him in the flesh. Like I said, only had a couple of pictures of him all at night. Last year in 2021, you know, the first picture that I got of him, his body just looked huge. I was thinking, oh man, that's got to be at least a 4-year-old deer. Then I had one picture later on in the season, you know, after the rut, you know, post rut time frame where they're really focusing on food, and his body looked, you know, substantially smaller. And I don't know if the first picture, you know, really was not, you know, wholly accurate, you know, just didn't look like how he actually looked, made him look bigger. Sure. Or if he was completely run down after the rut, and, you know, his body just looked substantially smaller afterward. But I knew he was a good deer. He was a mainframe 8-point. I didn't see any stickers or kickers or anything on him last year, but only had those three pictures. And like I said, no real history with him other than those pictures. Never actually saw him.
How did that data, so did any of that information, other than the deer survived, relate to your hunting opportunities this year? Were there annual trends or bits of data, timeline, or anything like that that worked into your success this year?
Yeah, so how it worked out, I only ever had that deer on one camera, which was, you know, very much on the western edge of the property that I'm able to hunt, our family farm. So what that told me to do was basically get more cameras out in that area and see if I could figure out how he's using the area and, get more data, more intel on him. And so I deployed two more cameras around that same area and actually ended up getting him much more frequently on one of those two new camera locations than what I had the previous year. So that's really how it helped me out in gathering information and intel to help me kill the deer.
Yeah, and so that everyone who follows this podcast listens to Steve Shirk, the clustering of cameras example. That's exactly what he does, and that's perceptually, you know, how he breaks a deer down, understanding why and where they're using an area, and then puts a timeline together. So, you know, credit to you, Anthony, for, you know, putting more information and gaining intel in order to kind of facilitate, you know, thinking through his potential demise at this point. So let's roll into the kill. Like, what's the history? What happened? Let's get into the punch here.
Yeah. So, I tried, you know, real hard to catch up with that deer, during archery season, actually had him on camera, you know, midday tending a doe and, you know, throughout, this really kind of thicker area where I had most of my pictures of him. I got pretty aggressive, or what I thought was pretty aggressive, took my saddle and platform set up and got within, you know, 125, 150 yards of where I knew that deer was. He was actually bedded down in front of one of my cameras, right before I went and, made that setup, that play to go get him. Continuing to get pictures throughout the day. He was in there moving around, like I said, tending this doe, and those deer were all over the place in there. And I just never laid eyes on them. They never got out into the open where I could actually see them. My hope was, you know, in making that play that the doe would, you know, come out and be looking for a bite to eat. And there was a clover field. I was between them and a clover field where she may decide that she wanted to go get a bite to eat. And it just never really worked out that way. They stayed right in there and never got a look at him. I ended up having some more pictures of him after that. And one of the pictures kind of tipped me off to where he might be bedding during the day. So I got a picture shortly after dark. He was coming out of an area that we call the peninsula. And inside this peninsula, it's kind of a hardwood, peninsula of woods, and back toward the back edge of it, there's this creek with a knoll and ridge. And, with that picture, kind of told me that he might be spending some time in there bedded. So having not been able to catch up with him during archery season, the last weekend of archery, actually during a rainstorm, took one of my mobile stands and running gun kind of units and set up a stand for him. The intent of going in there and trying to get on him during the opening weekend of firearm season, right on this draw, this creek and ridge system. And, so I hung the stand, got it set up and, ready to go for the opener. Now, in New York with youth hunters, they do need a mentor. I mentioned that earlier. And on the gun opener, I had my son, my second boy, Trevor, with me. And so he was able to use the stand that I set up back in that draw. And I actually climbed up above him with my saddle and platform. So we were together. For those who hunt in New York and were out there for the opener, at least in Western New York, A good portion of the state got quite a bit of snow, especially in the Buffalo area. We only had a few inches of snow where I hunt in Steuben County, but the weather was pretty brutal. It was about 20 degrees, which, in and of itself isn't horrible, but, we had winds, sustained winds of 15 miles an hour or more with gusts, pushing 30 or maybe even 40 at times. So it was pretty difficult to sit there all day. And, around 9 o'clock in the morning, my son needed to get down out of the stand. He was just too cold. Couldn't feel his toes, couldn't feel his fingers. And, I try to give the boys the best gear that that I can give them. That way, they're comfortable or as comfortable as possible. And, they stay excited and engaged in the hunt. But, with those temperatures and those winds, he just couldn't hack it. So, fortunately, about an hour before he decided he wanted to get down, my dad had shot a doe. So he needed help, getting that doe out of the woods and dragged down and hung up. So both my boys ended up helping him out with that. And I stayed in the stand. So that was at 9 o'clock, like I said. And at 9:30, I had a doe work her way in. And, I'm kind of watching her and I see some movement behind her. Get the binoculars up on that deer, and I could tell almost immediately that it was my target buck, Turner. So Turner has a couple of characteristics that make it really easy to identify him. I mentioned earlier that all of his tines kind of curve in toward the center, but he also has, what looked like scarring along his backbone on both sides of his back. And that was immediately evident when I pulled up the binoculars and even through brush and twigs and branches and stuff that I was looking through. So I knew it was him. And they came in and got to about 100 yards away, and there wasn't any shot opportunities for me. Too much brush, couldn't find a hole to shoot through. And he ended up bedding down at about 100 yards with that doe that he was with, bedded down about 50 yards away from him. And they stayed there for the next couple of hours, right around 11:30. The buck got up, Turner got up, and started making his way toward the doe. And, my thought, during this whole time was, maybe the doe would get up and bring him my way. Well, it just didn't work out that way, unfortunately. She decided to get up, and as he was approaching her, run the exact wrong direction, like directly away from me onto the neighbor's property.
Yikes. Yep.
Yep. And, the neighbors, they got a pretty large crew. They own a pretty good chunk of land. And I had no idea if there was anybody hunting over where he was headed. So, I was happy that I actually saw the deer. It was the first time I actually laid eyes on him ever. But, I was kind of afraid that he was going over there and going to get shot. And fortunately, I didn't hear any shots from over that way, and decided to stick it out. And, over the next couple of hours, bunch of different thoughts running through my mind. Is he going to come back out? I'm obviously in an area that he's comfortable with. Maybe the doe will bring him back. And right around 1:30, had a doe and a fawn come back through closer to me this time, maybe 45 or 50 yards away. And, shortly thereafter, 5-10 seconds afterward, the buck came through, and I was able to put a shot on him and put him down.
It's amazing sometimes how things work out when you're patient. And yep. That's a story of being persistent. I'm interested. You said Trevor, he got out of the stand, so he went a different direction than where the deer probably entered that particular area, correct? I mean, how did he escape out of there without busting him?
Yeah, so he ended up, the deer first came in from the exact opposite direction that Trevor went out on. So that worked out really well. Our access to that area is somewhat intrusive, but the you know, the way that that we came in is the same way that he went out, and he didn't push anything as far as I could tell. So that worked out pretty well.
Yep. Yeah. That's it's funny sometimes that's just by chance or what have you, but you know, it's funny the way these things work out or meant to be. And also you didn't know what was happening in the neighborhood. So you had to have faith, and obviously the spot you had scouted and laid out gave you some opportunity. Now the buck itself, you know, how old do we think this deer is? What would be your guess?
You know, I would guess at least 4.5 in maybe 5.5. I, you know, last year, the 2021 picks that I have had of him, I would have guessed that he was 4.5 then, except for after the season, that made me think maybe he was 3.5. So he's anywhere from 4.5 to 5.5, I think.
Now, do you plan on sending the incisors in? Are you going to do that, or are you just going to go with the tooth wear?
No, I'm definitely going to send them in. I've got a couple of sets that, you know, I've been waiting on to send in, just procrastinating, I guess. So I'm going to send a few different sets in at the same time and see what the results are.
Yeah. I understand. I think that's probably worth your while to do that. So, you know, it's fun, right? You've got areas that are highly pressured around you. You've got areas that some people are managing for older age class deer. And then you've got your property where it's a little bit of a smorgasbord, right? You're trying to manage, yet you have obviously these young boys, you know, I guess trying to establish themselves as hunters. You've got your family members that spend some time in the woods and are usually pretty successful. And you're able to capitalize. You've been waiting a long time to kill a buck like this. This is probably one of the biggest deer that have been shot on that farm, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Without a doubt.
Yeah, and you've killed big bucks over the years. Your strategy has changed. I think when we first met, you and I, you know, you were kind of running gun, doing deer drives. Like, the strategy evolved. You've had some consultants out to take a look at your property. You've also, yep, your mindset has shifted a little bit in collaboration with me and things that we've talked about. But you're really, like, this year, I would say, and you've killed some great bucks. I mean, there's no doubt you've killed some studs, you know, locally and then down that way. You know, I think it's your ability to stay focused and collect data. You are running a lot of cameras. You're analyzing the data. You've got history on these deer, and you've got some deer for the future that I hope make it. And, you know, hopefully one of these next year targets bucks, you know, you may even exceed, you know, the score of this particular deer. Not that score matters, but boy, if it was a 5-year-old buck, you know, reaching that potential is really something special in any area, particularly in Western New York or on those farms, knowing what the hunting pressure is like around you. How do you feel about all that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm definitely fortunate to be able to have you know, a nice place to go to with good potential, and, you know, to have some like-minded neighbors that you know, allow those types of deer to be running around, you know. So I'm excited for the future as well. I think I've shared pictures with you of a, you know, really nice 10 point that I'm thinking is 3.5 years old right now. I saw that deer last year, 2021, in the flesh, as an 8 point, actually have his shed. In 2021, I thought he was a 3-year-old. Looking at his shed, I'm pretty sure he was a 2-year-old. If he's a 2-year-old in 2021, he's a 3-year-old 10 point in 2022. That deer has some potential, and you know, I've got a ton of pictures of him, lots of data to go from, that will, you know, hopefully allow me to make a good play on that deer if he makes it into 2023.
Yeah, I think that deer will probably, if he does, you know, survive, will maybe exceed this particular deer's score for that matter. So that's a positive, and yep, be interested to follow along and see what happens next year with you. All right, let's rewind the clock, right? Because we talked originally about this property that you had purchased. You had some forest work done. You've had a logger come in, and he's taken the select trees that you've identified, and in concert with him have came to mutual terms on. And where are you at with your property? What are the things that you've currently experienced up to this point that you want to share?
Yeah, so I guess where things stand with the property, you know, the logging operation is just about done. It was much longer time frame than I originally anticipated, as far as how long it would take. So he got started in March of this year, and finally has everything wrapped up, excluding firewood. I think he wrapped things up toward the end of October. So, much longer time frame than I originally anticipated. I really had hoped that he'd be done like in August. That way, things could settle down and the impact to the deer would be minimized. That being said, I have more pictures on that 30 acre property than I do on the 100 acre property is the legacy family farm. So, it seems like the logging operation really didn't hinder or inhibit movement of deer or make them uncomfortable in any real meaningful way, especially, young bucks, does and fawns. The larger bucks that I've had on camera up there in the past certainly haven't had nearly as many pictures of them this year. Maybe they're a bit more sensitive to the logging activities. But overall, it really didn't seem to impede the usage of that property by the deer this year. In fact, my older boy was able to take his biggest buck yet off of that property just this past weekend. Nice 2.5-year-old 8-point. So he met his goal of taking a 2.5-year-old, and he was actually the first one to take a buck off of that property since I've owned it. We've owned it since 2014. So he achieved his goal and has the bragging rights of being the first to take a buck off of there.
That's great. So your next step with that property, you've got fine work to do. And I wanted to take note of one thing. For those that have probably listened to this podcast, I mean, I talked to a bunch of different consultants in the industry that do this, and I would not be scared at all to cut a property up into September. Hunting season in some areas start in September. I'm not sure I would be in there with a chainsaw on a daily basis in September. But if your season's in October, I would consider cutting up into September. I found the transitional periods, and even the deer interest in gain there is still high. You're actually providing value to the deer. Remember, think about this, the senescence period where, the plant life, the herbaceous material is starting to degrade. You're dropping treetops on the ground, and those treetops, if there's a lot of greenery, which there will be in September, you're providing a lot of food value, and they'll prefer that food value over something else. Now, this time of year, it's even more beneficial. If you want to go and suck deer into your property during hunting season, and you will create disturbance, go cut some trees. I know many people that do that in areas where they don't feel are too intrusive, typically on edges of fields. So that's kind of a seasonal strategy you consider and something different. So Anthony, I know you talked a little bit about firewood, somebody coming in and do that, and you've got some fine-tune work. Are you going to be doing the fine-tune work, or are you going to have the logger come back and do it? Are you hiring somebody? What's your next steps?
Yeah, so the logger will certainly be there to help out with moving some tops around and clearing out some areas if I choose. He'll be coming back in the summer time frame of 2023 when things dry out a bit, to grade trails, skitter trails, and make sure the logging deck is all situated and ready to go, putting in water bars and those sorts of things. So he said he's willing to spend up to 2 days there with his dozer doing whatever I need him to do to help out with my management plan. I don't have a fine-tuned plan at this point, other than his equipment and the time that he's offered me. I'll probably be doing the work myself. So I'm kind of in the early stages of, drawing up a plan and, where do I want to put food? How do I want the deer to move through? Where am I going to put bedding in relation to that food to make sure that they're moving the way that I want? And with this property, it's, the wind is very swirly. There's a couple of, gullies on this property that, just make the wind swirl quite a bit. And, that's a huge consideration when laying this property out. Use of elevated blinds to help contain scent, that's a major factor here. So I've really got some figuring to do on, putting together that final plan and making sure that it's all cohesive and is going to work for my needs.
Yeah, and you're lucky, you know, a guy who does this professionally that can come out and walk your property. So that is a plan for us this year. We're going to come out and we're going to probably do some shed hunting this year on your property. And it'll be interesting to see, how far you've come with everything. I appreciate you sharing everything today. I think one of the things I want to get into in the next go around discussion we have with you is how to stay warm during cold periods. And the other thing is your tree stand selection, your blind selection that you're going to have to go through, because at this point, that's going to be an investment you need to make. Again, taking money out of logging operation and applying into some return, that specific opportunity to put box blinds throughout the property, I think will be very advantageous and family oriented and kind of building that tradition of fun. Because I think getting cold sucks. I mean, there's no bones about it, but having something that protects you and then limits like the wind impact that we've talked about before. So I think that'll be critical. So I think we'll end there. We'll follow back up with you, see how things are going. Shed season will probably be our next discussion, and hopefully I'll have a chance to get out and observe everything you've got going on and probably give you my two cents on things, because I don't shut up. We'll talk a little bit more, and thanks for coming on and sharing the deer, and we'll probably, when we put this up, we'll post the picture of that deer. It's an incredible deer, great Western New York deer. You should be more than proud of yourself, and I'm happy to hear the boys did well. So it's all good.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right, man. We'll talk soon. Talk to you again. Bye. Take care.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.